just for the record, this is Steve Matthew and Travis Harms with AGP Video. And we are on recording and streaming live at the Calspan website. Also accessible through your website.
Well, thank you for letting us know. So welcome, everyone, to the July 25, 2019 Delta Stewardship Council meeting. Let's establish a quorum. Let's start with our council members on the phone. Ken, would you like to start?
Weinberg, present.
Scotto, present.
Fiorini in the house.
Maronian present.
Tatayan here. Thank you. Adoption of the item, agenda item three, adoption of June 27, 2019 meeting summary. Council members, what's your pleasure?
So moved. Gatto moves.
Moved by Gatto, seconded by Maronian. And the summary is adopted. Council vote. Let's start with folks on the phone.
Weinberg, aye.
Gatto, aye.
Fiorini, aye.
Maronian, aye.
Tatayan, aye. Thank you, folks. Thank you for the reminder. Chair's report, we had an excellent DPIC meeting on July 15. I was really heartened by the outcome. The focus of the meeting was the governor's executive order, executive order N-1019. It directs the secretaries of Department of Food and Agriculture, the Natural Resources Agency, and Cal EPA to create a water resilience portfolio. So what's going on presently, while the folks developing the assessment called for in the executive order are working with the data to follow through on the assessment, the administration, the secretaries are holding a number of listening sessions. And so we devoted the July 15 DPIC meeting to a listening session. And the session started out with an excellent summary of how the Delta Plan and the Water Resilience Portfolio can work together. Our policy and legislative advisor, Ryan Stanbrough, developed the two-pager and then gave an excellent presentation on aspects of the Delta Plan that would, in fact, bolster and carry out the principles of the water resilience portfolio. And the exchange among the DPIC members about the portfolio was really eye-opening. As Secretary Crowfoot pointed out, there were a number of programs being carried out by the DPIC, federal DPIC members that we in California did not know about, including a sub-cabinet level at US EPA devoted to getting a handle on water use programs across the nation. The Corps also talked about a watershed approach. NOAA Fisheries talked about a study going on above rim dams. If I'm understanding correctly, introducing salmon, and I think if John knows more about that, it was news to us, yeah. And there was a good exchange. A number of folks from the public commented. We had a number of stakeholder groups there, Defenders of Wildlife, Northern California Water Association, Metropolitan Water District, and the Nature Conservancy among them. So I'm heartened by the show of how DPIC can collaborate. And as we move forward, I'm expecting that the Water Resilience Portfolio folks will be open to receiving input not only from state agencies and stakeholders, but the federal agencies as well. So any questions?
Susan? A comment. One, I attended the meeting, and I thought Chair Tatayan did an excellent job managing the meeting and drawing out every seated DPIC member to provide comments. So it was, and I think the members seemed to appreciate the opportunity to exchange information in the manner in which it occurred. After thinking about the outcomes of that meeting, it occurred to me that there was some information provided that executives around the table were not familiar with as it relates to plans, projects, programs of other agencies. And so what I would like to recommend as a result of that conversation is to ask our staff to look into the feasibility of creating a quarterly report for DPIC from each of the DPIC agencies listing the plans, projects, and programs on their radar screen. Now, I recognize it would be a little bit of work to compile that list to start with, but even that would be a healthy exercise. But once the list is accumulated, updating it quarterly probably won't require too much effort. And making that available to the DPIC agencies would provide everyone a heads up, particularly with the plans, that would cause hopefully some meaningful collaboration and conversations. So that would be a recommendation that I would have after having observed a really good DPIC meeting.
Question, a clarification. Is this like an in-person presentation or just send a report?
Written. I would recommend a written quarterly report that would be circulated or posted on the DPIC website.
Okay. Yeah, I think we can definitely do something like that. It'd be helpful probably for us to develop a template and then decide whether quarterly or biannually makes sense in line with the frequency of the DPIC meetings.
So. I like the idea. So, Amanda, did you have anything you wanted to add? Okay. Yeah. I just want to say a special shout-out and thanks to Amanda, who somehow organizes all of the DPIC members, organizes the briefings, and keeps us on track. So on to the Executive Officer's Report, Agenda Item 5.
Okay. Good morning. Good morning to you on the phone and here in person. I have a couple of announcements I want to make. Distributed to everyone this morning is the Council's June Outreach Highlights Report. Of note is the Council's meeting at the Big Break Center in Oakley last month had strong engagement on social media, and you can see some other facts and figures there on that report. If you ever have any questions about our outreach efforts or the details of the report, please let me know, or feel free to reach out to Keith Coolidge. This month, I had the pleasure of attending a few events that I'd like to share with you. On the 11th, I attended the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Sacramento District's Change of Command and Retirement Ceremony. This was for outgoing Commander Colonel David Ray and incoming Commander Colonel James Hondura. So as a member of our Delta Plan Interagency Committee and a partner in most things Delta Flood Management, we really value our relationship with the Army Corps, and I appreciated the invitation to attend the ceremony. Plus, it's not every day you get to sing the engineer song and the Army song accompanied by the Army Corps of Engineer chorus. So maybe we should start a choir here at the Council. John Calloway may talk about this further, but I also had the opportunity this week to sit in on part of the Social Science Task Force workshop that was sponsored by the Council. The task force was formed in response to the Independent Science Board's Delta as Place review, wherein they recommended a more formal approach to using social science in Delta policymaking and what some of those benefits might be. We also raised the profile of the need for further investment in social science in both our science action agenda and in our recently updated Delta Science Plan. So I think this is kind of exciting new territory for us. We're accustomed to investing in and applying some of the hard sciences here in the Delta. As someone quipped at the task force, the social sciences are the harder sciences, the way we interrelate and make decisions, et cetera. On the topic of Delta Plan implementation and coordination, we sent one letter this month to the Sacramento Area Council of Governments, or SACOG, as we call them here regionally, regarding its notice of preparation of an EIR for the 2020 Metropolitan Transportation Plan and Sustainable Community Strategy. It's kind of a mouthful. We refer to it as the MTP and SCS for SACOG, and that's planner speak. So the letter to SACOG provides the requirements of the Delta Reform Act pertaining to regional planning in the Delta, along with comments on the scope and the content of the environmental document that SACOG is preparing. Council staff has been meeting regularly with SACOG regarding their 2020 plan, and the law requires SACOG to provide the council a draft of their plan 60 days before they adopt it. The council then has the opportunity to consider if the plan and the strategy are consistent with the Delta plan. If inconsistent, final adoption of the plan and strategy by SACOG must include a detailed response to the council's determination. So you'll note that this authority is slightly different than our covered action process and authority, and it's really intended to incentivize regional planning and consistency of those regional plans with the Delta plan. And there are three such MTP SCSs that affect the Delta. And I'll talk a little bit more later in my presentation about how we hope to bring SACOG to a council meeting for further interaction and guidance from the council later this fall. So I am working with the chair and the vice chair in collaboration with the Delta Independent Science Board and the U.S. Geological Survey to begin recruitment for the council's next lead scientist. Thankfully, Dr. Calloway isn't going anywhere quite yet. His term extends until next summer, but we've learned that in order to recruit the best candidates for the job, that it takes about a year lead time. So the recruitment flyer with details will be on our website by the end of this week, and it will go out via our social media and listserv. And what we're asking is that applications in order to receive priority consideration be submitted by October 15th. And now I'm going to turn to Bethany, who has a legal update, unless there are questions first about the first half of my report.
Thank you, Jessica. I'd like to invite John David Wooten up to the table. Members, John David is our summer extern, our legal extern, and he joins us from, he's a rising second year from McGeorge School of Law here in Sacramento in their honors program, and he's been a wonderful addition to our legal unit this summer. He will be presenting several cases to you, coordinated cases now, the State Water Board cases, which we last gave you an update on in February of this year. This is all the litigation surrounding the Water Board's recent update to its Bay Delta plan. John David.
All right. Thank you, Chair Tatai and members. I am, as Bethany told you, I'm here to give an update on the State Water Board cases. First, give a brief recap of the background and then some procedural updates. So for the background, on December 12th of 2019, the California State Water Board adopted amendments to the Bay Delta Plan, which set new unimpaired flow objectives and salinity objectives for the Southern Delta. In response to these amendments, on December 21st, a number of parties, including water districts and environmental NGOs, brought suit against the board for what they declared were errors primarily relating to CEQA. These original suits culminated in 9 cases in multiple counties. So for some procedural updates, on February 21st of 2019, the State Water Board petitioned for coordination of the 9 original suits into one case in Sacramento County. On February 25th, 2019, the Office of Administrative Law approved the amendments for the Bay Delta Plan. And on March 27th, 2019, three additional suits were brought against the board by new parties, including the United States of America. The United States of America case was brought in both state and federal court. In April 2019, Judge Urey was appointed as the coronation trial judge. And in early May, the state board petitioned to add the three additional cases to the coronation motion. A hearing was scheduled for May 6, 2019 for the coronation. And on May 8, 2019, 11 of the 12 cases were coordinated in Sacramento County. No judge has been assigned to this coordinated case yet. The United States of America case was not coordinated primarily because it was also being brought in federal court. But Judge Urey did state that the State Water Board could bring a new petition to add that case to the coronation. Since May 8, 2019, there have been some procedural steps, and the State Water Board has taken a new petition to add the United States of America case. We will keep you updated on any important updates in these cases. Occurring alongside the State Water Board cases, there have been efforts to create voluntary agreements. These efforts are ongoing, and there's still discussions. Thank you. I'll take any questions you have.
John, good report. I'm familiar with the water quality control plan update in the response. In their order, they relaxed the salinity standards in the South Delta. Were there any lawsuits directly related to the relaxing of the salinity standards?
I didn't see any of that. I know that part of the United States of America suit is that I don't think they relaxed it there. I think some water that is their jurisdiction, they increased.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I know most of it was flow-centric.
Yeah.
I just, I hadn't read or seen anything related to that, and I know there was concern in the South Delta about that. If it shows up, let me know.
Okay.
Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Council members participating by phone, do you have any questions for John Wooten?
Not for me.
No, okay. Nope. No further questions. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you.
Good job, John. Okay, so I'm going to move on to talking about where we are in our 2019 work plan. Included in your binder is a memo from me, which is essentially a mid-year check-in on the work plan. So the council has a broad mission, and the Reform Act set forth a series of mandates for us on a variety of topics. In the context of the Delta plan, we've focused our approach, and by setting annual work plans, we keep it manageable. We also let other people know what the council's focus is going to be and generally what they can expect from us over the year in our meetings and our efforts. So last year, a great deal of council time and effort was largely dedicated to regulatory proceedings, and our 2019 work plan really represented a continuation of activities that were begun last year, including the Delta Plan Ecosystem Restoration Chapter Amendment and rulemaking to implement the Council's 2018 Delta Plan Amendment. Nonetheless, we started with a full plate in 2019, and since it's July, I think it's a good time to check in on where we are in accomplishing what we set out to do and also to foreshadow what's ahead for the remainder of the calendar year. So I'd like to express my gratitude to staff for their diligence and their ability to aptly undertake multiple complex projects and to do that in a way that involves the public, and also to council members for your guidance and support. I'm going to highlight some major milestones from my memo. We completed this year the council's first full appeals action, and that came on the heels of another major appellate proceeding. We began the year by processing an appeal of the Smith Canal Gate project. Ultimately, the council found in favor of the project proponents, and this was the first complete exercise of the council's appeals review authority. Early this year, we completed one of the two rulemaking processes directed by the council as part of our conveyance storage operations Delta Plan amendment. We conducted and reported out on findings from a series of external focus groups and surveys to aid in the council's five-year review of the Delta Plan. And we completed a full review and update to the 2013 Delta Science Plan, which was endorsed by this body and by the DPIC agencies to coordinate and focus science efforts across jurisdictions to support the co-equal goals. In June, we presented to you the first full draft of an ecosystem amendment to the Delta Plan, which was a tremendous effort and milestone. We also managed to prepare and execute 22 contracts on 15 different research proposals as part of our multi-agency, multi-million dollar science funding solicitation. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention a milestone in Delta Plan implementation that occurred earlier this year with the help of our sister agency, the Delta Protection Commission, and that's the congressional recognition of the Delta as a national heritage area, California's first and only such recognized site. So in sum, we're on track with projected schedules set forth in the work plan, although there are a few exceptions. The ecosystem amendment and the climate change vulnerability assessment are taking a little bit more time than projected, but progress is still marching forth. Notably, a few new activities deserving of council time and effort came on our radar since we developed the work plan, and that includes the governor's executive order that Chair Tatayan mentioned and the subsequent special DPIC meeting we held on that topic. We also held a council retreat discussion on priorities and authorities in March, and we're in the process of planning a special council meeting in September in Southern California focused on efforts to reduce reliance on the Delta and increase regional self-sufficiency. We began the year with a goal to develop a public participation plan, but after hearing from the council members at the March retreat about your desire to improve our overall communication strategy, we've also hired help to outline a new communications plan for the agency, and we plan to discuss that with you in October. Also this year, we've been experimenting with some changes to our meeting format, including today's meeting, in response to council member feedback, and we're working to create more intentional linkages, especially in the lead scientist report, but in other publications and communications between science and the policy implications associated with that scientific information. So looking ahead to the remainder of 2019, we still have much to do. In August, we'll hold a formal rulemaking hearing on the Council's regulation to implement the Delta Levees investment strategy. An interagency working group to support that effort has been underway for over a year. And in November, we've invited the Department of Water Resources and the Flood Board, which are our partners in implementing, to brief the Council on the status of Delta Levees and related risk reduction efforts. Also in August, we'll bring a full draft of the five-year review report for council guidance, building on our May conversation around findings and preliminary recommendations. In September, as I mentioned, we'll travel to Orange County to see and hear about local investments in regional water projects in line with the state's policy to reduce reliance on the Delta. And after we publish the ecosystem public review draft, we plan to launch environmental analysis and further public review through the CEQA process later this year. On October 21st and 22nd, we'll be co-sponsoring the biennial State of the Estuary Conference in Oakland and the corresponding popular State of the Estuary report. You may recall that each year we alternate between a Delta Science Conference and a State of the Estuary Conference. At our meetings later this year, we'll be exercising the Council's review authority of other plans that affect the Delta, including the Delta Protection Commission's Economic Sustainability Plan and the SACOG Sustainable Conservation Strategy that I mentioned earlier. So those are the highlights, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Madam Chair?
Yes, is that Ken?
This is Ken. I guess I should identify myself. No, that's a great report, Jessica. And I mean, what really is clear to me kind of watching over, especially this last, year and a half, is just how much we and primarily the staff has taken on. And just, looking at the work plan, and it's the unanticipated things or the things that that maybe take longer than we expect or more ongoing that really seem to crowd out a lot of the other things. So I'm wondering if you're thinking about maybe looking at your work plan you know, maybe from a multi-year perspective, and you know, that may allow staff and the council to better prioritize and really also have that, you know, capacity to deal with things like resilience. I mean, strategically, that seems to be, you know, for the administration and for us, a really big issue that we have some scope on. I don't know. Seems like maybe that's the way we should start looking at this, you know, as over more than a one-year period.
Yes, thank you for that. I agree, and I think we have been considering the utility of setting a multi-year work plan, since many of the activities we undertake go over the course of a year or a fiscal year or two, based on the way we're funded. You're also right that opportunities pop up all the time, and I think what we've learned, or what I've learned, at least speaking for myself, is that some of the ways we are most effective as a body is when we pounce on those opportunities where there's momentum, either from the administration or from other agencies, to get behind an initiative that also helps implement the Delta Plan. I think it's very valuable for us to be able to pivot, to jump on that and to take advantage of opportunities to advance our objectives in that way. So carving out some space, some wiggle room makes sense. I think we are ambitious. We do sign up for a lot, and we accomplish a lot. Sometimes it takes us longer than we like, and sometimes it's because we engage the public heavily in the process. So I think that there's a balance there that makes sense. I'd also say that one thing I didn't really talk about, other than the appeal in terms of what we've been doing this year, is covered actions and tracking of covered actions. There's quite a bit of work that goes on just speaking with agencies about projects that are on the horizon. We also have no control over when projects come to us and file, and we have no control or little control over whether there are appeals of those projects. So it makes sense going forward. I think we're learning to build in some adaptive capacity in how we staff our covered actions tracking and process. So thank you for those comments. I agree, and it's something for us to think about.
Yeah, and just one other comment. You know, the format of the meeting today is interesting, and I just, Madam Chair, I just want to go on the record thanking my host, the Padre Dam Municipal Water District, for making their facilities available and noticing this meeting, posting the signs, and making available all our materials. You know, so I just want to say thank you to them and have it in the minutes.
Great. Yes, thank you.
I did send Jessica some pictures of the location, so just so you have a visual of where I am.
We'll tweet those later.
Are you in the picture?
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
No selfies.
Oh, no selfies. Okay. Okay.
Anything else?
Any other questions for Jessica?
Thank you so much. That concludes my report.
I have one quick one. Just the agenda of this December is not finalized yet, right?
No, not quite yet, but I think we expect within 2 weeks.
Some more thoughts, and I want to share with you.
Okay, yeah, we should get that in quickly then.
Okay, with that, so we'll move on to agenda item 6, the lead scientist report, Dr. John Calloway.
Okay, I guess I will start with a few items that aren't in your binders and highlight what Jessica Pearson has already mentioned, in that earlier this week we had a meeting with the Social Science Task Force. I think it was really a successful meeting. It was good participation. We had outstanding speakers from all around the country. It's on. The focus of the meeting was to really think about what sort of tools social scientists use to address problems, and how we can think about how those tools could be used. So, as I said, the focus was thinking about the tools that social scientists use and how we could use those tools here to address the issues What I took home was someone early in the morning said, there is no silver bullet, there is no immediate answer, no simple way that we're going to just apply and solve our problems with social science, but instead there's a broad range of different approaches and different kinds of tools that could be used together, everything from micro-targeting, from thinking about using marketing to improve, using marketing approaches to improve our communication, to economic approaches, to looking at trade-offs and relative benefits of different approaches. The task force themselves met the following day to really try digest all of the information that they got over the course of the day, and they're working now, and we'll be putting together a report, a draft report that will come out at the end of the year. And next month, I'll give you a much more detailed, and there'll be a summary in your binder to highlight that, because it really has been a significant effort. And I also want to highlight our staff, Rachel Kloppenstein, Yumi Hanaberry, and Lindsay Correa, who really helped to make that, have facilitated and really made the social science task force go, and also were very important in putting together that symposium.
If I can just add, too, I think what was really impressive and something that we do well here is we're able to invite people from all across the country. And so kind of learning from every different system and a range of approaches, and that is extremely valuable in informing the task force as they make recommendations to the council about specific tools that we can use for the Delta.
Yeah, I'd say some of it grew right out of the Science Enterprise Workshop with people from Puget Sound, from Chesapeake Bay, but also even from many other systems. So it was, I think it was a really successful symposium. Then in terms of upcoming events, I want to let you know about the Delta Invasive Species Symposium that's coming up next month, August 29th. This is an event co-sponsored by us and the Delta Interagency Invasive Species Coordination Team, or the DISC. And this is the third symposium that we've put on invasive species. They occur every 2 years. And this year, the focus is on remote sensing tools and thinking about how we can use remote sensing to better understand distributions in invasive species, spread of invasive species, and control efforts. Maggie Christman has been one of the coordinators on that. And the registration is still open for that. Again, it's August 29th at UC Davis. The registration is at the Delta Conservancy's webpage. They're facilitating the DISC currently, and so that's where the registration is if you're interested to attend. And then I also want to just mention the By the Numbers report that is in your binders, or that's at your table. And you'll see that everything is in green. Actually, flows remain at or above average. Reservoir storage is very high. In the upper right corner, you'll see that we've shifted from snowpack to temperatures. Temperatures currently are pretty much right on average with previous years. So if you have any questions on By the Numbers, I'd be happy to answer those. And then I also want to mention the update to the science plan. You all received that last month. Over the last month, we've been putting an effort into distributing that. It was distributed at the DPIC meeting, at the recent CSAMP meeting, at the Delta Independent Science Boards meeting. So we've been really working hard to make sure that that's being distributed widely. And then also, beyond just getting it out there, thinking about implementation and how we had an internal meeting with the staff just earlier this week to strategize about how we can encourage implementation of all the various actions there in the science plan. So now I wanted to move on to the article that I included in today's report, and that is the title of it is A Scale to Characterize the Strength and Impacts of Atmospheric Rivers. And for the first time in your report, we put together a visual abstract. So in addition to trying to improve the ways to get information across to you, in addition to the written summary, the visual abstract, this is something that Kate Melanson, the Sea Grant Fellow who works on communication issues, and Nir Oxenberg, although Nir just recently moved on from the council, but Nir really thinking about communication issues also helped to put together that the visual abstract, and I'll go over that in just a second. But just in terms of some background issues and why we chose this article, I think you all realize how important atmospheric rivers are to the overall water budget of the state. They highlight in this paper that atmospheric rivers deliver 30 to 50% of the rain and snow in California. And more importantly, they're likely to grow over time. Another companion paper by some of the same authors that came out just a few weeks ago highlights that all of the climate models, the climate predictions indicate that atmospheric rivers, there's likely to be growing variability in precipitation throughout the seasons, and atmospheric rivers are going to become an even bigger component of our overall precipitation budget. So these atmospheric rivers, I think, clearly are important for all kinds of water management issues, definitely relevant for the water resiliency portfolio that we're engaged in for levee issues and flood issues. It's these atmospheric river events that drive some of the significant flooding events. They point out in the article that the water coming down with these atmospheric rivers also important for floodplain inundation, for thinking about, and thinking about the amendment to the ecosystem chapter and improving connectivity of rivers and their floodplains. It's this intense storm events that's driving a lot of that floodplain inundation. So this article, the thrust of the article is to set up a system, a categorical system similar to what's used for hurricanes or other tornadoes, so that we can better communicate the potential impact of incoming storms and better understand the variability in storms, because not all atmospheric rivers are the same. There's a wide variation in the intensity of them. I also want to highlight that Marty Ralph is the main author of this paper, and he spoke to the council last year, I think last spring, about forecast-informed reservoir operations, and really this exact idea of how do we better understand mid-range forecasting to improve water management. And Marty's down at in San Diego at Scripps in La Jolla. He's worked with Sonoma County Water Agency and a number of other groups on this. But so they put together the scale that's highlighted on your visual abstract, a scale of 1 to 5. With 1 being the least intense storms and 5 being the most intense storms. On the left-hand side of the visual abstract, you can see that on the bottom, especially with the Category 5 storms, the white area that is a nice stream is that atmospheric river delivering water up in the atmosphere, water vapor in the atmosphere from the tropics up to our latitudes, and then that's what is the fuel that drives all of these intense storms. And as is indicated on the left, the atmospheric rivers have many benefits in terms of providing lots of water, sustaining wetlands, impacting wildfires, but they also have many hazards in driving flooding, storm surge, and levee breaches. And so the categorization that they come up with is based on the amount of water vapor in an atmospheric river, as well as the intensity of the storm. So they highlight on the left-hand column there that you can see most of the storms are low-intensity storms, and it's only out of the 300 or 500 or so storms that they looked at that were atmospheric rivers, only 10 of the 500 or so were Category 5. So those are the really rare intense events. And it's the small storms that are more beneficial. They still provide a significant amount of water, and because they're not so intense, don't have all the negative effects, and the more intense ones that have those negative effects. So I think those are some of the key highlights. The other thing to point out about this article is it's unusual in that it's an unusual mix of authors. It's both research scientists, people working more on weather issues, and people using this kind of data, because they really all wanted to think about how to make that information available and useful to a wide audience. Any questions on the article, and any questions on the phone?
Yeah, actually, John, what's the advance notice that is given on these kind of events?
The order of a week or so. They're in the order of weeks. Is they're improving the forecasting event. The challenge is actually, so I think there's a relatively a few weeks in terms of knowing that they're likely to come, but where they're likely to make landfall is the challenge, and that is more on the order of a week or so.
So,
but they're I think one thing Marty highlighted back in last year was that there's a lot of effort. Actually, also highlighted in your summary is that the state just put $9 million into improving our understanding of these, because if we can improve forecasting and push that time out to a few weeks, it can dramatically improve the way we manage reservoirs.
Yeah, I understand how it relates to reservoirs, but maybe you can explain, if you're a habitat manager, is there anything you do to prepare for this, or, what's you're going to benefit because the floodplain's going to get inundated, but do you take any actions?
I don't think there'd be as many management implications there as much as around the water management side of things. But I think just incorporating the realization, I think as we get better data historically, it'll give us better insight into frequency of inundations that are likely on some of those habitats.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Did I hear you right? Maybe I misunderstood what you said. Are you saying that the atmospheric rivers are growing in intensity and in size?
Yes, and growing and predicted to grow in frequency.
Okay, and that coupled with climate change could spell a disaster.
Yeah, and it's really driven by climate change that these increased heating and then increased both intensity and frequency of these events. And I'd be happy to send around the recent paper that came out that highlights some of those predictions from the climate change.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. Okay.
Any other questions?
I had a question. So is the ARC storm a Category 5?
Yes. Maybe beyond class. So, like in the Tour de France, they categorize the hills, and those that are so steep are beyond class. That probably is beyond classification. Okay. Okay, so the last two items then, I just want to give you a brief overview of a recent report that came out, the Interagency Ecological Programs Aquatic Vegetation Report. And this is a report, as you all know, invasive aquatic weeds have significant impacts, whether they're floating weeds like hyacinth, submerged weeds like Brazilian waterweed, or things growing right along the shoreline like water primrose. When we've done the tours of the Delta, you've seen some of the significant impacts of these on ecosystems, on boating and recreation, on other aspects of use within the Delta. And there, despite the importance of invasive aquatic weeds within the Delta and the growing importance, there hasn't been a consistent, coordinated monitoring effort to evaluate their distributions. And so this report is a overview of what is needed to go into such a monitoring effort, or a framework for monitoring of aquatic invasive weeds. And this was done, as I mentioned, this was a IEP, or Interagency Ecological Program effort. It was their Aquatic Vegetation Project work team that did the work, and a number of staff from the science program, Louise Conrad, Maggie Christman, Karen Kafitz, and Amanda Wasserman, the former Sea Grant Fellow, all worked on and are co-authors on this report. And what they really do is highlight, as I said, what kinds of monitoring is needed to get a better understanding of aquatic vegetation. Primarily, it's remote sensing, given that we want to cover a wide area, but also with some field verification. They highlight the different kinds of remote sensing techniques that could be used to look at the different kinds of vegetation, and the frequency and field work that's needed. And so this really lays out the pros and cons of those various approaches, and is, as they highlight, it's a starting point for discussion to set up a more consistent monitoring framework going forward, so that we will be able to monitor and evaluate trends in the various aquatic vegetation in the Delta. And then the last thing to highlight is the recent brown bag seminar that we had. And remember that we've had this three-part series on Bay Delta watershed connections, starting with the Chesapeake Bay. And the second part of that series was a presentation by Stephanie Fong from the IEP. She's the coordinating chair for IEP and also works at the Department of Fish and Wildlife. and previously was at the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board and has worked a lot on contaminants. So her focus and the focus of the series is on water quality issues with across that Bay Delta continuum. Some of the highlights from her presentation, she acknowledged that, you know, there are many boundaries in our system from the Bay to the Delta to the watershed. But it's not just spatial boundaries. There's also interdisciplinary or disciplinary boundaries in terms of the way we look and understand questions. I think at the Social Science Task Force, that was really clear in how we think about things. There's also boundaries of responsibility of agencies and state and federal, a whole mix of different agencies and organizations involved. She highlighted that really we should think about those boundaries not as problems, but as opportunities for improving linkages, improving connections, and improving cooperation between the pieces and improving understanding across those areas. Some of the ways she highlighted to do that are being more interdisciplinary, really thinking across disciplinaries, using new technologies so that we can take advantage of a broad range of information, not focusing on past issues, but thinking about how we can coordinate and collaborate on new issues, taking small steps to do that, and improving communication, building on existing programs like the regional monitoring programs, the state of the estuary efforts, where we already have some linkages, and using those efforts to continue to build the collaboration and cooperation across boundaries. I think, like for the Social Science Task Force, she highlighted there isn't really any single thing that's going to do it, but really a variety of different efforts that can improve that coordination and communication. So that completes my report. If there's any questions, happy to answer them.
Any questions for John? No? Thank you, John.
And actually, if you like the visual abstract, let me know. Mm-hmm. We'll continue to add those as another way to think about. Okay, great.
Actually, I like the visual abstract quite a bit. It's digestible. I can easily understand it. I like the idea.
We already have started one for next month, so.
Excellent.
We'll continue them.
John, I'm giving a presentation on Tuesday. I wonder if I can incorporate this into a slide for the PowerPoint.
Certainly, yes. As long as you could. It just include acknowledgement of the authors, because it's really the author's work, not ours. But, yeah, I can provide that for you.
Okay, thanks.
So I just quickly want to comment on this last item that John highlighted, Ms. Fong's work. And she speaks about going beyond boundaries. And at the DPIC meeting, Secretary Crowfoot emphasized that the last thing we want to do is stay in our silos and layer yet another report on existing reports, yet another plan on existing plans. So the theme, one of the themes, is integration. And there was a lot of talk about improving coordination among the agencies, improving communication, and doing a better job of integrating. So I think that Stephanie Fong's work is relevant, and it's something I agree that all of us can do a better job of going beyond our authorities, our boundaries, and getting out of our silos and coordinating better. So I was really happy to hear the theme of integration at the DPIC meeting.
A comment on what you just said. I think some of the earlier discussions that we've had is through communication and reaching out that we've had this discussion of what our findings are and where we are and, you know, our state of the state with others. That would probably be the beginning of this integration, just to know about what each one of us are doing. And I think this whole communication plan and everything is very timely to see what we can do differently in the light of creating this integration. How much out do we go? How much more? And what tools do we use to do more of that? Because that will be the base and the beginning of this integration that you're talking about.
Yeah,
I'm always worried that we do a lot of things and we think and say and write that stays kind of like in, yeah. I always worry about that.
Okay, and on to agenda item 7. Do we have any public comments? Nope, of any of today. Ken or Mike, any other business or comment?
Nothing for me. Just looking forward to our meeting, our next meeting. I think it'll be very productive and very good for the state. And appreciate everybody's presence here today.
Great. Thank you.
Same for me.
Okay. Well, the next council meeting will be here at Park Tower Plaza, August 22. And look forward to hearing and seeing all of you at that time. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.